Have you stopped printing photos and just scroll through your phone or computer to look at them instead? What will that mean for your family legacy and for historians? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the importance of photographic and written records and what's happening locally to preserve them are Voyager Media Group President Tom Law, Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library Genealogy and Local History Department Manager Larry Richmond, and Kenton County Public Library Executive Director Dave Schroeder. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Larry, are we seeing fewer forms of tangible documentation as we increasingly become a digital, more digital age? Tell us about photographs, letters, obituaries, and other kind of documents that traditionally get archived.
Yeah, it's a real concern for those who are doing genealogy research, which we work with every day, is to try to, have access to those documents. The most important thing, and I think my colleagues here will echo, is whether it's printed or whether it's digital, put the names on there. I sold your line, Tom.
Yeah.
But put the names. And then one of the things we've done at the library is we've worked with vendors and we used our technology ourselves to digitize as much as we can, just to make sure that those are still available going forward. But I would say back up. If you have your own, obviously everyone has their own digital content, and make sure it's accessible for sure.
Well, Larry, I know you work with a lot of people who are doing that genealogical research. How do these items, these written documents, the obituaries from the newspaper, the photos, really inform historians and families on a more personal level?
Yeah, so that's really the key, is to make them searchable and accessible. And there's some big strides being made by Ancestry and Family Search on a national, international level. And then the library does our own digitization as well. And it's kind of back to the future in a lot of ways, because not only is it modern to have things digitized, but it's a little bit old school too, because it wouldn't mean anything if it weren't cataloged, in a sense, if you didn't have the metadata, if you didn't have the subject headings. And one of the things that we're really pleased with on our digital library is you can search Google and it will just come up. And that's because of the hard work of the librarians and the catalogers who make this stuff accessible. Yeah. So keep giving things to the library.
That's a plug for you. Mm-hmm. So, Dave, natural disasters have been such a big concern for people all over the country. Locally, even house fires can destroy archives and these kinds of records, not to mention, the hurricanes and flooding and things that other people are seeing. How many local documents, local photographs have been destroyed by either, flooding or fires? I mean, do we lose a lot of that history in those kinds of events?
Absolutely. Natural disasters, like you said, fires, floods, all of those things have a huge impact on not only family memories, but also community memories. So many archives have been lost. People's personal archives have been lost. And that's why we really encourage people at the Kenton County Library to use our facilities and to scan materials. We have a scanner, a flatbed scanner that does large items, but we also recently just purchased a smaller scanner that actually you can put a pile of, your normal snapshots. You put a pile of them in, and it will automatically scan them very quickly, put them onto a flash drive, and you can take them with you.
Oh, wow, almost like a photocopier kind of thing.
Yes, and our goal is for people to use that to store it somewhere else from the original, but also to give us a copy. Mm. And that way we're adding them to our database as well. We right now have 136,306 photographs on our webpage. And I'll echo what Larry said. Scanning the records is very important, and scanning the photographs is very important, but it's the hard work of the indexers, those people who actually put the metadata in, that makes them accessible. And so it's one of the most visited sites on our library genealogy website by far. Mm. We're getting as many as 45,000 views a month, people looking at old photographs.
Hmm. Tom, we've been talking about preserving these records. Ezekiel Cooper Hawkins offers something of a cautionary tale when it comes to what can happen to photo collections. Tell us about him and what happened to his collection.
Well, let me also say I'm a great beneficiary of the work that the public libraries have done. And Cincinnati, Greater Cincinnati, was a center for the development of American photography, as we found out in our documentary Capturing Life, 1839 to 1869. And it's also a center for the preservation of photographs, thanks to work like Dave and Larry and their staffs. So we've been able to find incredible photographs that were taken in Greater Cincinnati, but then scattered to the four winds, everywhere from Europe to Canada, Texas, Seattle. And it's because of the work of the staff at museums and libraries and other institutions that do the metadata that allow you to have a searchable index. So we can take somebody like Ezekiel Cooper Hawkins, and we can find out that, yeah, there's two Hawkins daguerreotypes at the National Gallery of Canada. Who would have thought? But Ezekiel Cooper Hawkins, to me, who we featured in the documentary, was fascinating because he quickly recognized the value of daguerreotypes, early photo form of photographs, in preserving history. He took a series from 1841 to 1845 of portraits of Cincinnati pioneers, but in 1852, and exhibited them, heavily covered by Charles Sist and other authors, exhibited them in 1845 to great acclaim. But in 1852, his studio in the Apollo Building was burned, and he lost hundreds of these precious photographs that we've been able to find a few that may be from, were from by Hawkins and may have been exhibited, but there's like two that have survived that were probably in the hands of the families themselves. So fire was a huge danger in the 1840s, 1850s. But the biggest danger is just neglect. It's the next generation just throwing them out because they don't recognize the value.
We're talking about the importance of photographic and written records and how those records are being preserved locally. If you have questions or comments, call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Larry, and I'm going to ask you this too, Dave, so you get to hear what Larry says. What kinds of measures do institutions take to really preserve these kinds of documents? I mean, what are you doing to protect these archives, and is it anything that, that families can kind of use too?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, there are some enemies, several enemies to photography. One is light, and the other is sort of acid. So you want to make sure that anything you store your photos in are acid-free. Those are widely available. You also would just don't keep it in your basement. Let's just moisture is also not great. But that's, you know, the main things is have acid-free containers. That's what we've done with our material. And then, you know, scan them and as a backup if you can. But, yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah. Any other tips from you, Dave?
I echo what Larry said. I would also say temperature and humidity control are a big thing with paper and photographic documents. Keeping them in around 50% humidity, no more than that, and in a cool, dry place. Like Larry said, oftentimes records end up in basements or attics. They're the worst two places you could absolutely put any kind of historic record. So look for a place in your house or your business, not in the attic or basement.
That's fair. Well, Dave, you know, these days you can get artificial intelligence to write a letter to your grandma for you. I guess I'm wondering, from a historian's perspective, what do you think that'll mean 100 years from now when generations of the future are trying to kind of make sense of the past?
It's a brave new world, and we're all trying to figure it out, and I think we're all trying to figure it out together. You know, how photographs can be manipulated, I think, is a key issue right now. And so, you know, donating your materials to a library or an archive, make sure that those materials are kept in their original format. We have the original or we have a copy of the original, so there is that original photograph still available, and it hasn't, you know, been altered in some sort of way. I think it's also an exciting time with AI because I think it offers a lot of opportunities moving forward. But we just have to be careful about what we're doing with original documents and with photographs because there are so many clues and documents and photographs that if we start playing around with them, we lose the information in them. So we need to make sure that those originals are intact so that they're telling the story that they were meant to tell.
Yeah. Red eye and all, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Larry, it's written documentation, too, and obituaries in the newspaper have become expensive, sometimes cost prohibitive for families. What do you recommend as the alternative for documenting the death of a loved one and kind of their legacy? Are, you know, online obituaries kind of filling that void? And what are you seeing there?
So not really. It's a bit hit or miss. So, you know, it's a paid thing to have an obituary, and you know, maybe you can get it for free or get it from the funeral home for a short, you know, period of time. But then after that, you know, I really think that the FamilySearch.org, the, you know, putting your information and photos in places that others can discover it is really important. Or, you know, again, getting those things digitized at your local library. I think that's key. And I think there's questions about going forward, like, you know, all the content that's currently just digital form. So many of us have spent our careers working with, you know, going from the analog to the digital. If you start with the digital, there's lots of questions there. But I think, you know, folks are going to have to do some work on their own. They're going to have to put that information in to the commercial websites and make it available. I mean, at this point, I really think that's the best option.
Yeah, that digital-only stuff is what worries me. I don't understand the cloud. I don't know where my stuff is. I don't know how to, you know, I think it might disappear. Mm-hmm. Tom, you mentioned the documentary that you made that was wonderful. How have photographic archives been preserved locally over the years? What did you find about the importance of that preservation and what's gone into it?
It's vital. It's our visual heritage. And there's really certain sectors. One, the public libraries. If you go to the website of the Library of Congress, you'd be amazed at how many early daguerreotypes, James Ball, Ezekiel Hawkins, Fontaine and Porter, are there, accessible, downloadable at really high resolution. And that's very important that they're scanned at a high resolution because there's so much detail, including the 1848 panorama of Cincinnati, that historians can glean from the details hidden within those photographs. We're fortunate, like I said, we're not only a center for the development of photography, but you're looking at two gentlemen and their staffs that are nationally recognized for preserving this past on a massive level. It's daunting when you have millions of photographs, some dating to, well, 1839, the beginning of photography here in Greater Cincinnati, and going forward of making those decisions of what to digitize, what to preserve, what needs to be set aside because of budget and staff limitations. So the others are private institutions, and we have a lot of them, Cincinnati Art Museum, Cincinnati Museum Center, many others that are doing their best to preserve with limited funds the photographs in their charge, including the county historical societies, down to the local level and the family level.
Again, we're talking about the importance of photographic and written records and how those records are being preserved. If you've got questions or comments, call us at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Tom, you just mentioned that 1848 panorama. Tell us more about that and just its importance historically.
Well, going into this project, I had known about the daguerreotype view of Cincinnati by Fontaine and Porter. It's a masterpiece. It's the Mona Lisa of daguerreotypes. 8 daguerreotype full plates that are set in sequence that document the riverfront of Cincinnati taken from a rooftop in Newport that are clear as a bell, taken September 24th, I believe at 1:50, plate 2, 1:55 p.m. And it's stunning with the clarity and what the Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library has done, not only to acquire it and preserve it in 1949, something like that.
Yeah,
Fitz and Way.
Yeah.
But going forward to preserve it, encase it, make it available to the public, have an interactive website with it, but also take it to the George Eastman House for incredible preservation and incredible digitization that allows us to see the clock tower in the First Presbyterian Church, probably a half a mile away.
Wow.
It's an extraordinary piece of history, not only for Greater Cincinnati, but nationally and internationally.
Larry, the Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library also recently took possession of the Cincinnati Inquirer's photo archives. How many photos does that include, and over what period of time are we talking about?
Yeah, we were pleased to get this wonderful collection. So it starts in 1945, and it goes up until basically when the photos became digital in the early 2000s. And it's over, we think, about a million images. So it was pretty daunting. The Inquirer called us in October 2022 and said they're downsizing and they had to, you know, go to a smaller office, and unfortunately their library couldn't go with them. So we leaped into action, and several teams at the library worked and determined the best way to make this accessible. So we're excited to announce we have almost 11,000 of those photos available on the digital library, which again means they have subject headings. You can find them. You can search for that content. So and then one of the things that we've done, I think, is a little unique, is we've let our customers decide what we digitize, because, you know, you got a million, you got to start somewhere. So we obviously started with Cincinnati and what we thought might be popular, but then we said, you know, you can make requests, and then we'll scan they're in folders, 36,000 folders, and then we'll scan the whole thing. And it's sort of been a really neat thing to see that come together, because we had hoped there might be some commonalities about what folks like, and it turns out that's true, and it's helped us move the needle in a kind of a neat way.
Yeah. Well, and Larry, I saw the video of the boxes and boxes and boxes. I think they're banker's boxes, and rows of those photos. It looks like that Indiana Jones movie scene where there are just boxes of stuff in a basement. You think, what's in those? Is it like a treasure hunt to just open those boxes and see what's in there?
Well, thankfully, it was organized to start with by the Inquirer. So we maintained that organization for the most part. But our teams did go through every single folder. And like I talked about, rehoused in acid-free folders, and we had acid-free banker's boxes. But one of the things how we made it accessible was we just wrote down what the Inquirer called that folder. And so all 36,000 of that now is online. So that doesn't mean everything in the contents are digitized, but it's at least a stepping off point. So that's one of the debates we had within my team was, you know, what's the best way we can make this accessible in the quickest way? Yeah. And so that's how we started.
Dave, I'm wondering if this sounds a little familiar to you, because the Kenton County Library has the Kentucky Post Archives, I believe. What does that include? What does it entail to preserve all that?
Yes. So the Kentucky Post actually donated their entire photo morgue to us in 2005. So we've been at that for 20 years. We have digitized and indexed most of that collection. All of it is, everything that we have indexed and digitized is on our website, which is called Faces and Places. We had a contest, and one of our staff members came up with that title, and we've run with it. But that collection, I think Larry is dealing with the same thing we were 20 years ago, in that the Post did a great job of identifying the photographs, who was in them. You know, they had them in an order that made sense to them, and we've maintained that order as well. But we have also benefited enormously from those photos. They cover mostly from the late 1950s through the 1990s, when digital became, part of the newspaper scene. And so those photographs are from all over. You know, the Post had a pretty robust photography department. So we have photographs of presidents visiting. We have photographs from all over the state of Kentucky, from Southwest Ohio, Southeast Indiana. They sent people to different parts of the country for different events that had a local connection. So the range of photographs in that collection is amazing. And I think Larry would agree with me. One of the things that, if you're looking for photographs of Northern Kentucky places, Come to our database, obviously, but also check Cincinnati's because they have some materials on Northern Kentucky that we don't. And vice versa, we have some photographs of Cincinnati people, places, and things that they don't. It just depends on where the photographs ended up. And so we play off each other all the time and refer people back and forth because we all live in one region. We may be in different states, and there may be a river between us, but we're all connected. A
lot of overlap. Tom, do you think there's a growing interest in physical media? And I ask this, we just found a Polaroid camera at my mom's house, and my daughters are both grown women, and they're just obsessed with it. It's like, a picture that just spits out of the camera. It seems like such a novelty. Do you think that's becoming more popular these days?
I think people like tangible things. Sit down with a newspaper in your hand, sit down with a book in your hand, and leaf through a photo album. When we talk about scanning all of these family archives, you can't replace that to a degree of sitting with a grandchild and leafing through and identifying. I would also invite anybody who has an album like that and has an older patriarch, matriarch in the family to record it, to have them point out and go through and talk about who is in these, why was it taken, who is Uncle Charles, those kinds of things. So the oral history and the photographs work hand in hand to reconnect you to your ancestors, and it can be lost in one generation.
That is so true. We lost my mother about 9 years ago this August, and about 3 years before she passed away, I loved old photographs and history growing up, and I knew this photograph album existed of her family, but there were no notations in it whatsoever. And so I sat down with her and said, "Now, who is this?" And she said, "That's your grandmother in her 20s. You know, I had no idea. You know, all the aunts and uncles, the great-grandparents, you know, immigrant ancestors. So, you know, she and I sat down. I said, page one, we wrote everything down that we could to make sure that's preserved for the future.
Yeah. Time well spent, I'm sure, with your mom, too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Very much.
Well, I've been talking with Voyager Media Group President Tom Law, Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library Genealogy and Local History Department Manager Larry Richmond, and Kenton County Public Library Executive Director Dave Schroeder. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.